Are you on a whirlwind tour of the States?
Yeah. Just, it's not so whirlwind. I mean, I have 3 days here. Then I go to Detroit and Seattle and Portland and Denver and San Francisco. Yeah.
Nobody reads in Detroit.
Oh ho ho ho!
You're in a bookstore. Have you ever been to Detroit before?
No, I never have.
You're probably never going to go back.
Okay.
It's even worse than Liverpool. No, Liverpool.
No, don't be like that.
quite nice with a history to it.
Absolutely.
Well. But you're living in London now, aren't you?
That's right, yeah. In Wimpole Street, in fact.
Near the Barretts?
Just near the Barretts, yeah. Just around the corner from the Barretts.
Boy, you've been busy. Now, the last time you were here, you had come out with a book of short stories.
That's right. In Human Condition, we talked about that, I think.
That's right. And that was the first appearance that you had in the United States.
That's right.
And I knew you were working on other projects, and since that time you've had The Damnation Game and now Weave World. You've also done a movie.
Yeah.
You haven't been sitting still, have you?
No.
Fill me in on everything you've done the last couple of years.
What have I done the last couple of years? I guess part of the thing is that the American publications of the stuff are pieces that are backed up in England. I mean, I'd done the 6 Books of Blood. And volumes 3, 4, and 5 came out as In Human Condition, then In the Flesh, and volume 6 is to come out next year. So they were already around. It must seem to Americans like I'm suddenly producing all this stuff. Where the hell did it come from? And in fact, the books of novellas have been written, you know, now, I guess, 2 years ago. The Damnation Game was published in England last year. I'm sorry, the year before that, in hardback. And then that last year in paper, and Weave World gets its first American publication on Friday. In fact, it gets its first world publication on Friday. So this is the first time, really, that Weave World is the first time there's a book which is written for an American publisher, explicitly for an American publisher, to be published first in America. The rest of the stuff has been stuff which I produced for English markets, which has been printed over here later. Now we're kind of getting into the correct rhythm, which is that we publish in America first and then in England. And there was the movie in between. I wrote and directed Hellraiser, which is still number 3 at the box office this week, which I'm pleased to see, which is very, very gratifying. It didn't cost too much money.
Mm-hmm.
I guess we made the money back on that picture in the first 2 days of being out there. It was a real cheap picture.
Well, you're really a man for all seasons.
A man for all seasons, yeah. Most of them dark, but...
well, you look normal enough.
But Weave World is a new area for me in the sense that it's not a horror novel. It's not, you know, there isn't that much grisly stuff, and there's some strange stuff, there's some dark stuff, but it's a fantasy book very much, and that's the direction that I'm going in. The new book is the book that will follow Weave World is a fantasy book, and the next movie will be a fantasy movie. So I've very much moved away from the horror stuff consciously. Well, I'd done 7 books of novellas, you know, which is like 500,000 words. I'd done The Damnation Game, I'd done Hellraiser, I pretty much immersed myself in the grisly and the visceral, and felt like it was time to see whether I could do something different. Also, this book, Weave World, had been a dream project of mine for a long time, long before, in fact, I even got the other stuff published. And the couple of projects which I've got coming up, the fantasy projects, are also kind of projects which I've been planning for a long time. So a move into the kind of soaring, visionary fantasy area which excites me at the moment is one which I've been plotting and planning for a long time, which isn't to say that the horror fiction was simply a route to get to that. It wasn't. I mean, I'm very, very happy to have done the horror stuff. But, you know, if you like, I've done my Titus Andronicus. I'm now on to my Midsummer Night's Dream. I feel like I've shed a lot of blood in the last, fictional blood, you understand, in the last, I guess, 3 or 4 years. And it's done real well for me, and I'm very happy. But there are other notes I want to sing, if you like, and the benigner elements of my nature needed
the what?
Benigner elements needed an out. They really did.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not unusual. The last book that Peter Straub wrote, The Talisman, was a fantasy book, and of course,
sure.
He initially started writing poetry and straight fiction and moved into the horror, and now he's gone into the fantasy.
Right. And I think Steve King has moved through various areas. Eyes of the Dragon is not a horror novel. He was also part of The Talisman, and you're quite right, again, it was not a horror novel. There's a whole area here which is very interesting to me, anyway. This whole thing about what a genre definition is anyway. There are large areas of fantasy in most horror fiction. There are horrific elements in a lot of fantasy fiction. There's a lot of crossover. And booksellers need to be able to categorize books, you know. They need to be able to call this book a horror book and put it in a certain slot on a shelf. But I think there's more crossover than is often accepted.
Do you believe that the person who, the reader who likes horror, especially your horror, is going to be as adaptable as you seem to be and take to the fantasy?
That remains to be seen. I mean, I'm hoping that I will bring with me from my horror readership people who will, you know, have this new adventure with me, if you like. They're not going to find in Weave World, those people are not going to find in Weave World the explicit violence and, as I say, visceral imagery which they found in my horror stuff. But they're going to find, I hope, compensations in the sense of the bizarre, surreal stuff that actually happens in the book. And you know, it's every bit as imaginative as the horror fiction. It just isn't as violent. The eroticism, which is very much a part of the earlier stuff of the horror fiction, is intact in Weave World, and that pleases me. It's nice to be able to bring a touch of eroticism to the fantasy field.
Well, you got to have a few entrails hanging out.
Yeah, one or two. One or two. I mean, you can't get through 600 pages of an adventure, however fantastical, without there being a little bit of violence. But that's not the aim of the book. The aim of the book is not to disturb and distress, but to offer a kind of adventure which has a great energy and I hope a kind of optimistic vision behind it.
Well, tell me a little bit about Wee World. Here is a quest for this magic carpet that takes you into different worlds. Tell me how this developed in your mind, and tell me about the carpet.
Okay, the carpet. The carpet's always kind of interested me because in a lot of classic fantasy fiction, routes to the mysterious and to the unknown happen through the most conventional means. You step through a mirror into Wonderland, or you fall down a hole, depending on which volume you're reading. Alice goes through. You know, a very simple route to get to Wonderland. In C.S. Lewis's Narnia book, you step through a wardrobe. In other words, the hidden world, the mysterious world, the magical world is very, very close if you just know how to get there. Now, I'd thought for a very long time, wouldn't it be great to do a book in which a world was actually woven into a carpet? So what we've got in this book is a people, the seer kind, who are the last owners, the last possessors of magic on Earth, what they call rapture. They don't call it magic, they call it rapture. The last possessors of rapture on Earth. This is the end of the end of the last century. And they're gradually being destroyed by a force that's just come for them. And they don't quite know what this force is. They call it the Scourge, but they don't know what it is. All they know is that it's decimating them. So the only thing that they can really do is hide. They haven't got the power to fight the Scourge. And they decide to hide in the most commonplace item, a carpet. They decide to weave themselves into a carpet. They weave their flora and fauna, their theology, their philosophy, their landscape, their houses, their children, everything into a carpet. And their hope is that they will reside in that carpet for a little while and the Scourge will pass on by. And the Scourge does indeed pass on by, but a greater threat to their existence appears, the 20th century. And the people, the custodians who are left to look after the carpet, decide that maybe magic doesn't exactly belong in the 20th century and they'd better keep the seer kind where they're safe in the weave. And the time passes and the custodians die and the carpet gets lost. So eventually what you've got is a carpet which is in which resides all the magic of the world, all the rapture of the world, all the transforming powers of the world, lost somewhere. Until our hero Cal Mooney and our heroine Susanna Parrish, one by chance, one, as it turns out, by intention, discover this carpet in my hometown of Liverpool. A less likely place to find magic, it is difficult to imagine. And thereafter, of course, they've got a problem on their hands. Once they wake the occupants of the carpet and the weave, the scourge, the creature which came for the seer kind all those years ago, is again rewoken. And so they find themselves also facing Shadwell, the great salesman, the great villain of the book, the guy who cares only to sell this carpet, to own this carpet for a moment and then sell it, to have the power over magic that selling it will give him. And, you know, we've got a battle on our hands, a major battle. You know, this great metaphysical monster who lives in one of the great deserts of North Africa, the Scourge, and Shadwell, the salesman, against two ordinary people in their early 20s who want to preserve magic but really know damn all about it and have to learn very quickly. Otherwise they and the seer kind and the fugue, which is the land which the seer kind occupy, will be destroyed.
Well, I don't know how analytical you have been as a writer, but I was thinking not very successfully. What why in the human psyche we have such an interest in horror, fantasy, worlds that take us away from our own. Have you thought about this?
Yeah, I have, and I don't believe they are worlds that take us away from our own. I think they are finally worlds which help us confront our own. I think good fantasy and good horror fiction, good fantastique fiction, by which I mean science fiction, fantasy fiction, anything which is the literature of the imagination, is finally a way of offering metaphorical solutions to the world in which we live. I think bad fantasy is merely escapism, and I use the word merely intentionally. I mean, I mean it as a pejorative. I think any book which you escape into and come out of feeling as though you haven't really learned anything which is going to help you confront the life that you live outside the pages is not a particularly useful or fine piece of work. I think that the responsibility of the writer of fantasy or horror fiction is to actually offer up metaphors which help us explain living to us, explain being to us. And fantasy can be remarkably adept at doing that, because at its best it kind of straddles a sort of dream worlds and the world in which we occupy, the world which we occupy rather, and the that sort of sense of being able to synthesize the world of our imagination, the world of our dreams, the world of our hopes for heaven, and the banality and the grind of day-to-day life, I think is very instructive and can be very instructive and very useful.
You're saying then that that fantasy, horror, science fiction, this is not really escapism.
At its best, it's absolutely not escapism. It's offering up metaphors, if you like. To take an obvious example of a legend, if you like, which has shaped our culture, which is in one sense a fantasy, but in another sense it speaks very acutely to us, and a legend which is actually very pertinent to Weave World, the Eden legend. I am assuming, not being a fundamentalist, that the book of Genesis is not historically true, but the idea of Adam and Eve being somehow exiled from a place of perfection makes some kind of sense to us. It makes some kind of internal sense to us as animals, as as dreaming creatures. And my belief very strongly is that what Jung would call the collective unconscious is responding all the time to metaphors and story shape, story forms, which can be best placed in fantasy and horror and science fiction, because your dreams, my dreams, we don't dream reality as we're living it now. We dream very elaborate structures, very baroque and extraordinary things, and our subconsciouses find that a good way to explain the act of being on a day-to-day basis to ourselves. Our dreams are a great way to kind of explain living. I think our dreams are a kind of organization of the problems of the day that preceded the sleep that we're having. And in the same sense, I think that fantasy fiction can be an organization.
Now, let me ask you this. As a creature from our favorite country and having come here a number of times, book tours and this sort of thing, have you noticed any difference between the readers in England of your work and the readers in the United States?
Not really. Finally, the readers, I mean, it's not just readers in England, it's readers now in Japan and Germany and Spain and wherever else. I guess the books are in 10 or 11 languages. The mail I get, once I've translated it, pretty much is pretty consistent from country to country. I find that the kind of people who read horror fiction and fantasy fiction are actually remarkably open-minded people from whatever walk of life or whatever country they come.
Are they younger people?
No. There's a huge age range, which surprised me at the beginning, I must say. I mean, when I would go to signings and there would be people in their 70s with books for me to sign, that shocked me. I had naively supposed that horror fiction was basically, and I'm going back now to the horror books, so I haven't done any signings for Weave World yet. It'll be interesting to see whether that audience is different. But the signings for the horror books, the audiences were, you know, they began around the age of 15 and they stopped just short of death. And it's very exciting to me to feel that a fiction which is all too often kind of dismissed as being a kind of adolescent thing, you know, you'll grow out of it, son, is in actual fact something which appeals widely to both men and women of every age. And what's important about that, I think, is that if it's good fiction, it's good fiction. Good fiction appeals across the board. I think it's there may be certain kinds of horror fiction, you know, Attack of the Killer Crabs kind of fiction, you know, which is just one, scene of cannibalism after another, which does have a much narrower appeal. But it's perfectly clear from Steve King's sales and fans, and from Peter Straub's and from Ramsey Campbell's, and maybe from my own now, that this kind of fiction, imaginative fiction, has a very broad-based appeal.
Now, you have a ringing endorsement from Stephen King. He said, I have seen the future of horror, and it is named Clive Barker. Of course, this is on a book that's not a horror book.
That's right, absolutely. Yeah, well, you know, publishers do that.
So have you had a chance to meet Stephen King?
I did Good Morning America with him about 6 months ago, which is the first time I met him, which was a great thrill for me. I had dinner with him the night before so that he could, you know, tell me how I should do this, because I hadn't actually done morning television before. He is a great guy, and I feel like, you know, he said all these nice things, but finally, you know, he's the boss. He's the boss man. He does this stuff so well. He touches so many people across the world. I mean, I don't know how many books there are in print, but it's, you know, it's in the many, many, many millions. my kind of fiction is finally very different from his. I think we come at the act of writing fantasy and horror fiction from slightly different angles, and I'm glad of that because I can't compete with the master. You know, I'm doing slightly different things.
Compete with the master, and your work is always going to be evolving, and Weave World shows an evolution in your work, and you might indeed branch out into other forms of literature in the future.
I'd like to do that. I'd like to do some science fiction. I'm doing a couple of illustrated books. The only thing I don't think I'll ever branch out into is reality. You know, I don't think I'll ever come up with a adultery on campus novel, or a male menopause in London novel. You know, I don't think that's in me. But I think the fantastic material offers so many possibilities. Imaginative fiction offers just so many possibilities in all fields, horror and science fiction. And
you realize you created a bibliographer's nightmare. We've got the Damnation Game, published by Ace Putnam.
I know.
Poseidon, I guess they did your... who else? So you've had three publishers here.
Berkeley did 1, 2, and 3 in paperback of the Books of Blood. Putnam, who of course are in the same company as Berkeley, did Damnation Game. Poseidon did In the Flesh, The Inhuman Condition, and now Weave World, and they're going to be doing my new novel as well, the one that follows on from Weave World. But the thing for me is that, and this is what's so great about working with Poseidon, with Ann Patty, my editor at Poseidon. I mean, she says go for it. I mean, I said, look, I don't want to do a horror novel. I want to do something completely different. And she said, you know, let's do it. Finally, as long as the imaginative components are there, that's what's exciting.
Well, Clive Barker, I have to let you go because I know you have another appointment, but my last question is, I think the last time we chatted you were having some difficulty convincing your parents to accept your material, and so I wanted to see if there's been a turnabout in their attitude.
There's been a turnabout in part because there's a few slices of the hometown in Weave World. Cal Mooney, the hero of the book, has a great-grandfather who's an Irish poet. I have a great-grandfather who's an Irish poet. There's a few little personal touches which my mom and dad recognize as being, biographical or autobiographical. Just a few. And I think that's kind of mellowed their opinion. Also, there is no viscera, you know. I mean,
there's no man eating pigs.
No man eating pigs, you know, and I think that'll do it every time.
Clive Barker, thanks a lot.
Thank you.